Good morning.
Well, thank you.
Okay. I got one of those. Okay. I'm calling to order the regularly scheduled meeting of the San Diego City Housing Commission for the month of October. Today is October 9th. We're coming together at 9:04 a.m. if anyone's keeping super accurate time. A couple of administrative announcements that some of you who attend regularly are probably sick and tired of hearing me say, but I'm going to keep doing it because I'm supposed to. Members of the public who wish to address the Housing Commission must complete a speaker request form. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes each. Collective testimony by those who support or oppose an item shall be limited to no more than 15 minutes total per side. As an aside, we've only had to invoke that rule one time in the last six-plus years, so that doesn't happen often. Non-agenda public comments are heard at the beginning of each meeting. Those who wish to address the board about a topic that is not on the agenda must fill out a white speaker request form and turn it in to Angie over here in the corner. Members of the public also may request to have an item pulled from the consent agenda once that is proposed, by submitting a speaker request form prior to the start of the meeting. So if you suspect that I'm going to suggest an item that you love to be moved over to the consent agenda, just, you know, do a little forecasting, grab a speaker request form, and go for it. Members of the public, to speak on a matter on the agenda, and we're going to ignore that phone. To speak on a matter on the agenda, members of the public must complete a speaker request form and submit it to the recording secretary before the item is called. I'm actually a member of a couple of groups that they say, okay, there will be a $5 fine if the phone rings during the meeting. This may be a side method of gaining funds for affordable housing. So if we do that, leave them on. Those who wish to speak in opposition to the item must complete the pink-colored form, and those in favor of the item must complete the gold-colored form. And there is nothing intended by any way by the choice of those colors. We can change them next month if we want to. On that, we've covered the administrative items. I see no request for someone to speak on a non-agenda item, so we'll move beyond that. Commissioners, do any of you have any comments? It's nice for you to be here. Actually, it's nice for me to be here, too. So, yes. But it's good to see you. Yes. And any other commissioner comments? I'm going to give one, and that is I'm absolutely jealous of Commissioner Moraga because without any special effort on his part, he gets to go watch an international fencing competition in Europe next week because his father-in-law is an internationally ranked senior fencer. And I think that's great, which means also that his little baby, who has been born fairly recently, is, again, an international traveler. So talk about someone to be jealous of. I'm jealous of the baby, come to think of it. Okay, next is the report by the President and Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Gentry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got two very brief announcements to share with the board this morning. Two very good things happening today, as well as this board meeting. Veterans Villages of San Diego has a grand opening today at 10 a.m., and the grand opening is for its new expanded facility, which will accommodate homeless female veterans, specifically 18 transitional housing beds and supportive services for female veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan era. San Diego Housing Commission has invested more than $1.4 million in this expansion. This is the fifth expansion phase of VVSD, which operates a five-acre campus at 4141 Pacific Highway, where 350 veterans reside. I would encourage any of you all who are interested in seeing this facility to go. A fellow named Phil Landis runs it. They are a friend of this organization. As well as they should be, we've invested more than $8.4 million in VVSD's operations, or rather in their construction over the years. And I would encourage you to go by and visit and see this facility. It is truly doing some wonderful work. Also, later today, there will be a ribbon cutting for new storage lockers going in at the City of San Diego's Homeless Transitional Storage Center. It's at noon. The ribbon cutting will be for 304 additional storage lockers at the City of San Diego's Storage Center, which is at 252 16th Street. The storage center provides lockers and bins for homeless individuals to store their belongings as they look for housing, employment, and to attend school. The storage center clears the streets and sidewalks of downtown San Diego of more than 30,000 pounds of belongings, and it is a reflection of successful collaboration. As you may recall, the San Diego Housing Commission administers this contract for the city, and the center is operated by a nonprofit organization called the Girls Think Tank. In addition, the Housing Commission leases this site to the Girls Think Tank for only $1 a month, with the promise that the think tank will use the rental savings of just under $1,800 for program funds to operate the storage center. Our chairman is going to be there for that ribbon cutting later today, and those are two worthy activities that are of note today, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
You know, it's really important, as a veteran, I think it's really important that we celebrate what VVSD is doing over there for the veterans, the female veterans, primarily of the most recent incursions that we've had. A lot of the women did not think that they were taken on in a combat-related MOS when they went into the military, and because of the changing nature and expanded duties that we place women in, they found themselves targets. If you'll remember, we had one that was actually captured, and our special ops team went in and got her out. And so it's very important that we recognize that contribution that the women are making to our military, and this is pretty special. In terms of the girls' think tank, I'm just jealous, but we don't seem to have a boys' think tank. But they're doing a fantastic service to the city by providing a place where the homeless who are trying to move beyond being homeless are able to securely safeguard their possessions while they clean up and go see if they can get a job or go find new housing, whatever. So it's a very worthwhile service that the girls are providing. I remember getting chastised one time when I referred to a couple of women as girls 20 years ago and before I got enlightened. So, all right, moving on. Next call is the approval of the minutes. We have the minutes for the regular meeting of September the 11th, 2015, and the special meeting on September 17th, 2015. You've all received copies of those minutes. I trust that you've had an opportunity to read them, review them. Are there any changes, corrections, or anything of that nature that you've noted that you'd like to bring up?
Move approval as presented.
I'm assuming that the answer to my question is no. Commissioner Tussin has moved approval of the minutes as submitted. Is there a second? Commissioner?
It was you.
I actually recognized your voice this time, Maggie. It has been seconded. Any additional discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor say aye. The minutes are approved as submitted. Okay, quick housekeeping. Item 100 has been removed from the agenda for today. And I'm proposing that items 101 and 102 be moved to the consent agenda. But before you respond to that suggestion, council has a comment he wants to add to item 102.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. With respect to item number 102, the title of the action is correct. It says the San Diego Rescue Mission Revocable Grant Repayment and Release of Affordability Restrictions. However, action item one does not include the release of the affordability restrictions, and it should. So we'd ask that any motion to approve that include the release of the restrictions as well.
I move approval.
Okay. The proposed consent agenda has been moved approval with the amendment. Is there a second? Commissioner Surdy has seconded that motion. Any discussion? Seeing no indication of such, all in favor of the approving the consent agenda as supplemented by council, indicate by saying aye. Opposed? The consent agenda is approved. Next, we'll move into item 103. And who's? Thank you. Proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. Ted Miyahara, Director of Housing Finance. With me is Carrie Tapia, Program Analyst. The recommendation before you is an amendment to the fiscal year 2016 budget to add $1.5 million to the homeownership budget. This year's home buyer activity and volume maintained pace with last year. The home buyer team has managed to commit their FY16 budget in the first 3 months of the fiscal year. Demand for closing cost assistance and silent seconds remains strong. This budget amendment would allow for additional first-time home buyers to make a purchase. With that, I'll turn it over to Carrie.
Good morning, Carrie Tapia, Program Analyst in the Real Estate Department. The action before you is a request to approve a revision to the approved Housing Authority FY16 budget to add $1.5 million of Home Investment Partnership Program funds to the homeownership budget for the first-time homebuyer program, of which $1,350,000 will be used for loans and grants, and $150,000 will be used for administration. And item two is to authorize the president and CEO or designee to execute all documents and instruments that are necessary and are appropriate to implement these approvals. In 1990, the Housing Commission began administrating the first-time homebuyer program, and since then we've helped over 5,000 families. Over the years, the assistance has been funded with many sources. However, home funds has been its primary funding source. The San Diego market conditions continue to remain strong, and for many years our target population has been interested in our programs, and our program activities have exceeded expectations. The program started the 2016 fiscal year with $2 million budgeted, with $1 million in home funds and $1 million in inclusionary funds. Staff secured an additional $1.4 million in grant funds, comprised of $500,000 in CDBG and $900,000 in State CalHome. These sources combined totaled just over $3.4 million. Since July 1st, we've processed 42 applications, 18 of them have closed, 24 applications are currently in process, and we have made reservations for another 8 families who have recently had offers accepted. Unfortunately, there's not enough funds in the budget to assist all the families looking for homes, so we do have 7 families on a waiting list right now waiting for approval of these additional home funds. And if approved, these additional $1.5 million in home funds will assist 22 additional families to purchase their home in San Diego. This concludes my report, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Just by clarification, then that will take the 22 will include those that are currently on the waiting list.
That's correct.
And then another 15.
Correct.
Okay. Commissioner Tussin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a great program that meets a lot of good. And I was curious as to whether we would deplete the funds, but clearly you've answered that question, so I move approval.
Okay. Commissioner Tussin has moved approval. Commissioner Surdy has seconded that motion. Any discussion? It's interesting, just 2 days ago I was having a discussion with a realtor, and I was telling him that he needed to get his client in, you know, to be considered. And he said, "You guys are out of money." I said, "Call back next week." So anyhow, I'm going to call the question. All in favor of the proposal as submitted, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you very much, and keep up the good work. Item 104, Home Ownership Opportunity Program Loan Write-Off. and the opportunity is for home.
Good morning, Chairman Gramling and Housing Commissioners, President and CEO, Mr. Gentry, and our legal counsel, Chuck Christensen. I'm Ann Kern, Vice President of Housing Finance and Program Development, and with me is Vicki Mons, our manager of our loan servicing department. Item 104 is a unique request. We have operated several different homeownership programs over the years, and this item is regarding a program that was started in the mid-1990s. Vicki is going to give you the details regarding the request. And with us this morning is the President and CEO of Community Housing Works, Sue Reynolds, and Gabe Del Rio. And at the end of Vicki's presentation, we would like Ms. Reynolds to give you an update on what's happening in our organization.
Good morning. Item 104 is a request to accept the reduced loan payoff of $241,293 and authorize write-off of the balance of $233,707 from Community Housing Works as the successor in interest to the San Diego Neighborhood Housing Services for the Home Ownership Opportunity Program, that's also known as HOOP. In September 1995, San Diego Neighborhood Housing Services began operating HOOP. The program helped families earning up to 100% area median income purchase a home in City Heights. In between November 1995 and April 1997, San Diego Neighborhood Housing Services applied for and received four separate allocations of Housing Commission funds, totaling $465,000 for HOOP loans and $13,000 for administration. The loans to San Diego Neighborhood Housing Services were not secured by deeds of trust, but are documented by promissory notes and loan agreements for each allocation of funds that they receive. The Housing Commission loans are recourse notes with 20-year terms at 0% interest. The loans funds were to repay to the Housing Commission as the loans to the individual buyers were repaid or the maturity of the Housing Commission's loans. San Diego Neighborhood Housing Services initially repaid the Housing Commission $18,580 as the loans were repaid and later converted the Housing Commission loan funds into a revolving loan program with the intention of repaying the Housing Commission at loan maturity. The first loan of the four that we gave them does mature in June 2016. San Diego Neighborhood Housing Services was later acquired by Community Housing Works, who continued to recycle loan payments to new HOOP loans. In June 2015, Community Housing Works requested the Housing Commission write off the full amount of the $465,000 loan and allow Community Housing Works to continue reinvesting rent payments into other Community Housing Works programs. The reason for the request included the discontinuance of the HOOP program in 2010 and the loss of the $223,707 during the last recession and the restructure of Community Housing Works business model. Because there are funds available for repayment, staff is recommending the repayment of $222,713. Community Housing Works has $100,842 in cash available from repayments, in addition to 15 outstanding HOOP loans in the amount of $121,871 that can be repaid as the loans become due. This action would result in the write-off of the $223,707 of Housing Trust Fund dollars and the receipt of $222,713 that could be reinvested by the Housing Commission into other affordable housing activities. And that concludes my presentation.
Honorable Chair, members of the Commission, Sue Reynolds, President and CEO of Community Housing Works, and joining me here at the podium is Gabe Del Rio. It's going to take me a few minutes to give this a context, so I appreciate the staff's invitation for this opportunity. The Commission members primarily know Community Housing Works by the rent part of our historic Own Rent, Achieve Your Dreams tagline, because that's what has brought us most frequently in front of you as a body. But in truth, our staffs have probably spent more time together talking about homeowners, because Community Housing Works has been the principal organization supporting the success of first-time home buyers in San Diego County. We've been the principal source of home buyer education. Our down payment loans have sometimes bailed out a loan that was going not quite meeting the commission's requirements. On that side, you in turn have provided that service for the home buyers we were serving. Our first mortgage loans have been a very important source of mortgage finance for the down payment loans the commission has made. So we've been working together on these issues for quite a long time. That home ownership work, as those of you who are on our email blast may be aware, is about to take on a new name, Springboard. And that's because Community Housing Works has made a brave and strategic decision, as we've been growing both our home ownership work and our rental housing work with your support, statewide. And what we discovered as we planned for that growth, on the rental side, we've grown 40% over the last 1.75 years in apartments owned, half of those here in San Diego County. And the homeownership expansion plans for the whole state are similarly aggressive and happening. What we discovered in looking around the country is there really isn't another nonprofit that tries to serve these two diverse ways of meeting the stable home needs of the folks we're all trying to serve. The complicated world of home lending, which only gets worse every year, or more so, I guess, more complicated, and the complicated world of housing development and apartment ownership over a scale the size of California. It's hard to be geographically scaled and run two such diverse businesses. So our board and senior leaders set us on a path to find another partner for the home ownership work, which has been about 20% of Community Housing Works' overall activities for many years. We found the perfect partner in a regional and multi-state nonprofit called Springboard, which the commission has worked with in many ways. They're a financial services nonprofit that also runs the Keep Your Home California program for those housing wonks who think about foreclosure and other such things, and have the ideal technology platform to automate loan making. This will make Vicky's heart beat faster, such that we can make the cheapest loans in the market, because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to help people buy the cheapest homes in the cheapest way, because at our current scale, as you can see by the action before you, the commission and we have to subsidize even the making of more loans. It doesn't support its own costs if you're doing it all by hand. So we're very excited about the way in which this positions CHW as now a purely multifamily organization to continue its growth and the programs that, like your Achieve Academy, help our residents succeed. And how Springboard, the family of corporations that is Springboard, under the leadership of Gabe Del Rio, who's been our thought leader in expanding our home ownership work, is going to take that work forward. I'd like to, and the other thing I want to make sure to let you know is that Springboard has been in San Diego County for over a decade and has made a commitment to add a San Diego County board member to its board as a further indication of the depth of its commitment to continue making sure, which was our board's charge to us, that San Diego has a premier nonprofit that's supporting the success of the first-time home buyers we're all trying to serve. I will talk briefly, and you can imagine how that discussion advanced the question of how we're going to repay the commission's loans and brought us to this meeting. I want to give Gabe just a minute to talk about some of the possibilities we have in front of us with this restructuring and creating two separate organizations for you to work with. And then I want to return briefly to the agenda topic before you. So Gabe Del Rio, president of Springboard CDFI.
So yes, as Sue has said, I'm no longer COO at CHW, and we have actually split into two separate organizations. We've renamed our lending corporation, Springboard CDFI, and joined into this national group called Springboard, which is a consumer credit counseling organization, and they're a national HUD intermediary. which is also really important for all the lending that we do, because we make sure that everyone who gets a loan from us is educated and counseled and ready for homeownership. I suppose what I would say about the possibilities that we have before us is that you just added a great deal of funding to your down payment assistance program. We represent a bulk portion of the originations on the loans that go in front of those down payment loans. And what we're doing is we're really expanding that, not just statewide, but in everywhere that we can go in the Springboard footprint over the future. And we're bringing in some really amazing technology that that Springboard will provide to this work, which was invested in through the Treasury's Hardest Hit program. So if you think about it, their funding for the state of California, 1,000 people a month, 1,000 homeowners a month. There's no nonprofit lender or provider or CDFI that's working at that scale. We're looking to translate that program, which will sunset in a couple of years, into a front-facing, low to moderate income focused mortgage lending and down payment assistance provider. And so we're growing that in scale. We're using technology to do it. It's going to make it easier for people to attain this kind of financing. And because of the technology, as Sue said, we'll actually reduce the costs in manufacturing, which bring the cost of borrowing down and make it long-term sustainable. So it's pretty exciting stuff. We look forward to continue partnering with the Housing Commission and with the County of San Diego to utilize and deploy all that down payment assistance funding. And as much as you can provide for it, we'll help you spend it.
And RTF.
One of those things is an exciting opportunity that is just starting to bubble up thanks to the Housing Commission's leadership and staffing of the Reinvestment Task Force, which involves most of the banks in our area who are all interested in working together on a homeownership program. And so we just started cooking up. We might be able to come in and sponsor a mortgage product that would help the banks actually cooperate and then work with the Housing Commission on different steps in that process, where Housing Commission staff might be able to be deployed and there would be some fee for service there, where we can all actually work together and bring in some innovative financing to San Diego that doesn't exist, which would remove barriers to home ownership for working people.
Thanks, Kate.
So I know that the issue before you is not as cheerful as our history together provides. So let me go to that less cheerful action that we have asked to place before you. The money that you were able to provide us, these 20 years ago, definitely before my time, probably not before Hal's time, but before everybody else's time, rotated, as staff's presentation suggested, and allowed us to use that money three times. So $1.3 million in debt was issued, and most of it was repaid, and then we recycled it again. Unfortunately, when the music stopped in the greatest homeownership recession in the last 70 years, by the natural recirculation of that money, much of it was fresh loans. And so when everyone lost value, when 60 or 70% at the worst peak of the recession of homeowners in San Diego were underwater, had more debt than they had equity, than they had had no equity, they were in the negative, you can imagine that our borrowers were in an even worse position. So as a consequence, most of the money that was then outstanding became uncollectible. We came to the Housing Commission in partnership and asked to write off not quite the whole amount, but the amount that wasn't in hand from cash that had already been repaid. Your staff is tough but fair. And so their response, which doesn't quite get captured in this report, their response included asking us to pay back the amount from 15 loans, about $121,000 that are listed here, that you should know are such a bad risk of repayment that they've been written off under accounting rules and are no longer in our balance sheet. So essentially, in this agreement, the commission is accepting some pain, and Community Housing Works is accepting the very high likelihood that we will have to dip into other revenue or future fundraising to make those repayments as they become due. With thanks for the fairness and stewardship of your staff, we are happy to stand in support of this proposal and to answer any questions.
I don't see anyone rushing to push their little red button there. But
we'll sit down until we're called. Oh, sure.
Commissioner Moraga has a question.
So thank you for the presentation and all of your long years of work on this. But just trying to understand it better. So this was a 20-year loan, 0% interest that was recycled many, many times, or three times, sorry. And now we're proposing writing off basically half of it because of the circumstances.
You got it.
I guess my biggest concern here is precedent sensitive. This is a very dicey road to walk, I think, for us. I'm just speaking for myself. Economy happens to a lot of people, happened to everybody, actually. So I'm very concerned about this, and with restructuring our organization, a lot going on, how does that figure into the repayment of even this half?
Well, as you can see from the detail, half of it is sitting in cash in Community Works account, Community Housing Works accounts. And in this spinoff, Community Housing Works has retained complete responsibility for this. Community Housing Works stands behind its debts. We have probably $5 million in non-recourse debt made by a variety of bank partners at this time. And they make that debt to us because they trust us to repay our debts. So I believe the Housing Commission's history with us is similar, and you can count on Community Housing Works being there, even though those loans, as I've said, are at best only going to be repaid partially.
Commissioner Spoon.
Thank you for your presentation and for your very good work. How were these specific loans selected?
Well, I mean, when the music's – right, sorry.
You have many, many loans. How were these selected? And have the assets been lost? Are they gone? Are the houses gone?
Right, so let me explain that. As a manager of multiple investors' funds, and anyone who loans money to us becomes an investor, we have a fairly elaborate accounting and other systems that literally tracks, unlike in most accounting, tracks which dollar goes into which loan that goes out to our home buyers. So it's like the money's all colored. So the Housing Commission's money was colored green, and all of the green money was tracked over the years, and we knew when the green money homes were into foreclosure and there wasn't enough equity to pay off the junior debt, which we represented. In the same way, there are 15 of the green loans outstanding for which we have trust deeds. Those folks still owe us. But in our review of the equity position of the homeowner, there would be no reason to try from our junior position to throw that homeowner into foreclosure because the odds we're going to get repaid aren't high enough. If God is kind and time is kind, when that home is sold in the future, there may be equity at that time and we may get repaid, but our obligation to you will be separate from that, as the loan documents I'm sure will indicate and do indicate today. So we're on, Community Housing Works is on recourse for the debt, regardless of the performance of the remaining green loans.
Are there any other at-risk loans?
No, we audited and the staff in turn audited our records and determined that the numbers in front of you are reliable.
So the HOOP program itself is disappearing?
Well, we have multiple investors in all our loan products. So the HOOP program became outdated by the structure of contemporary lending years ago. So yes, they've all been renamed. We have new trendy names. We have new products and each investor's money, but still stays tracked to that investor.
So no one has to jump through hoops anymore. Commissioner Davis, you had a question.
I liked the way Vicky said it. Hoop, hoop.
I was just curious, are these properties vacant or are the same people still living in them? What's their position?
The potentially collectible loans, which are the ones that are still recorded on property, those do still have the homeowner in the home.
We have an inspection program that annually verifies that. because the loans are also callable in the event they aren't owner-occupied.
So the properties in question are occupied still by the owners?
Yes, for the potentially the 15 loans that have been written off as non-collectible. However, they are still recorded as a lien against the property and the homeowner is still in the home.
Okay, so will they be asked to leave when the property is sold then, or what's happening?
When they sell, then they will have to repay all liens with all available equity because it's still in recorded position.
Okay.
The first mortgage is first, the second, okay. And these were often second mortgages, and so they were all second mortgages, so when, or in third, so when this crisis hit, we were wiped out, and there was no equity for us to foreclose on. We would just lose more money in cost and fees chasing that foreclosure.
Was there any particular pattern of the people that have failed the most in the loan applications? Was there any particular reason cited for those losses?
You know, we tend to help the most underserved communities. And so communities of color and lower income communities were hardest hit in this foreclosure crisis. They had the greatest dip in equity. It happened there first, and it happened there worst. And those were the communities that we were invested in. Those were the people we were invested in. And as Sue said, you know, we had made most of this last round of loans just in the last couple of years, right before the drop in the crisis. So it was basically at the peak of the bubble. While they qualified, their home was often worth half as much just that next year, and then they would have had a hardship in the economy, like loss of job. They couldn't repay that. The home was foreclosed on. I mean, CHW, when the foreclosure crisis was happening, we were the largest local provider of foreclosure intervention counseling. We closed almost 10% of the loan modifications in San Diego County. We've never had 10% market share of anything. Many 6,000 people that we helped homeowners. We did everything we could for these homeowners to keep them in place and get them all programs available to secure the asset. It wasn't possible in these cases.
Commissioner Tussin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me preface my comment by saying that I'm familiar with the work that Community Housing Works has done for a number of years and the fine work that you've done for our community here. I'm trying to get my head around this issue here, and I could understand it if you were here 2-3 years ago with the situation here, but the market is increased in value of late, and some would say it's pretty hot, and values have continued to increase. How is it that in 2015 that we're still in this predicament here where these properties are underwater?
Well, that's really a good question, Commissioner. Let me see if I can explain it. The debt to the commission wasn't due. So most of the losses that we're talking about now happened a long time ago at the height of the crisis. So it's not as if they just happened and we weren't able to fix it. They happened in 2008, 2009. The debt wasn't due. We didn't call the question. The commission understood a lot of what was going on in ordinary reports. None of us called the question until in the process of looking at these. When debt becomes current, it gets more attention for my accounting friends. So as this debt moved into the current column and we had to focus, was the first time we actually looked at this investor class of loans separate from our entire portfolio and came to the commission with our request. So the remaining 15 HOOP loans that have been written off under accounting rules do have upside potential based on exactly the market forces you're quoting. And as I say, they're fairly irrelevant to this discussion because Community Housing Works is going to repay you the money that we owe you, whether we ever get that money or not. And some of those folks may be in their homes for 10 or 15 more years. So in many ways, my talking about it may have turned out to be distracting.
Commissioner Spoon?
Ann, did you consider simply amending the due date? I mean, it's a 0% loan. So why not just postpone until the date of sale, whether it's 10 or 15 years down the road?
In essence, that what we are requesting. We are, have asked Community Housing Works to pay the $100,000 that they have in cash now after approval, and then the remaining 15 HOOP loans they will pay as those loans become due from the home buyers themselves. But in the event that there is a loss on any of those 15 loans, Community Housing Works will still repay the Housing Commission on those 15 loans.
And those loans become due on either vacating the property, foreclosure, or sale.
Or refinance potentially.
Or refinance, yeah. Right. And so they, because they all have upside potential, we are leaving them in place in essence.
So the home buyer is not asked to sell the property. They will remain in the home until they are ready to sell, and then per the sale will trigger the repayment of those loans. We'll talk about the maturity dates of the four loans because it gets a little complicated with that, but we'll work that out.
Well, we have a long history with Community Housing Works. We have a long history with you. We both were there 20 years ago when we first met. So, anyhow, Mr. Gentry, you have a comment?
Just a general comment. This is a delayed recognition, as Sue said, of financial losses that occurred several years ago. This was a result of the financial crash in 2008-09 that led to the Great Recession, and perhaps in an ideal world should have been recognized sooner. It was not because it did not have to be. And it's not unlike banks carrying bad loans on their balance sheet for a time when they can afford to do so. I'll point out to the board that we could extend everything and to the long-term future, but the Housing Commission also gets significant cash here right now, which we can use for other good purposes. And it also, I think, reflects some hard-nosed negotiations by the Housing Commission staff, also as Sue indicated, which I very much appreciate, and this board should too. And I think in banking terms, both sides took a haircut here. And so it's a way to put something behind us and to get on with business. And not to presume what the board's action is going to be, but we do submit this for your approval, and we do recommend it.
You know, going back to Ben's concern about precedent, is there any other circumstance where this could happen again?
I don't know of any other loans that we actually made to individual companies like this for them then to make loans out. I believe this is the only time that it happened, the four times to Community Housing.
To my estimation, the similarity is the fact that we, too, have had to write off several loans that we made directly to homebuyers who found themselves in those predicaments and all. So, yeah, it's something that we're not unfamiliar with. Commissioner Spoon has moved approval of the proposal as submitted. Is there a second? Commissioner Tussin has seconded the motion. Is there any additional discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor of the proposal, indicate by saying aye. Opposed? It's carried unanimously.
Thank you always for your support.
And we look forward to our continued relationship.
Let's go do great stuff.
Yes. Item 105. It's a workshop.
Good morning, Chair Gramling, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, and Mr. Christensen. I'm Debbie Ruane, Senior Vice President of the Real Estate Division, and with me is Wendy DeWitt, Director of Business and Program Development. This morning we will present to you our progress on the work entitled Addressing San Diego's Housing Affordability Crisis. As you know, we've been working at your request and at that of the City Council
to research what drives affordable housing costs. Specifically, we have been trying to understand what drives the costs and why affordable housing can be more expensive than market rate housing. Once we understood the drivers of those costs, we wanted to see who could assist with modifying them to lower the costs and increase production. Many of these issues are not directly within the Housing Commission's purview, and they lie at the city and the state and the federal levels. So we've narrowed our findings as we looked at the key issues and recognized that we can put our action steps into four categories. So at the request of the Smart Growth and Land Use Committee, we came up with an actionable list of cost drivers, and they can be grouped into leading and innovating, unlocking land, streamlining regulation, and increasing finance. Wendy, I'm going to turn it to Wendy. We're going to kind of tag team this presentation, and if you cover some of these a little bit deeper, I'd appreciate it.
Great. Thank you, Debbie. As Debbie said, we've been studying this, and when we came to you last, we had some raw data done by our consultants, Kaiser Marston, on affordable housing costs. And we realized, yes, affordable housing does cost more, and the drivers of those costs were identified. And we had a very exhaustive list of about 60 things that drive cost and impact housing production. So what we've been doing since that time to formulate this into a report with these action steps that Debbie just summarized is we've been looking at all of those factors, boiling them down, and creating a priority list of actionable steps based on this data. And that's what we're looking forward to in the report that's being structured now. So I'll go over these in a little bit more detail and give you a little bit of background. But under lead and innovate, for instance, the first three items, to actually have an impact and track what's going on, we need to set annual housing production goals, and we need to revisit those so that we know what type of progress is being made. Create more incentives for 80-20 developments. This is an underutilized program that's backed by tax-exempt bonds, 80% market, 20% affordable. We're looking at incentives to attract market-rate developers into this type of production, realizing that the 20% affordable we get will be cheaper for us to produce. Defer all development fees. That would be innovative, and we've heard from both the market rate and affordable developers that this would be beneficial and would save them money and time equals money. Unlock land. We've all talked about the land inventory, and some of it is government controlled, and how can we better utilize land? Priorities that we've identified would be to reduce parking requirements. Use that land for housing. We're trying to direct our developments to transit. This will help reduce the parking requirements, reduce commercial space requirements. We see this over and again in our affordable developments where commercial space is a requirement, a land use or zoning requirement, but it's very difficult to finance. And when the economy goes up and down, it's very difficult to occupy, and it's additional cost. Increase ground leases. For some of the inventory that may be in city or other public agency control, if we could review that land inventory and ground lease land to developers at minimal cost. Streamlining regulation. Shortening the entitlement process was also very high on our stakeholders list, the market rate and affordable. We're working with the city and talking with folks there and believe that the entitlement process can definitely be shortened and would result in a substantial cost savings. Approve master EIRs. This is, we have a template for that in the downtown area. Having a master EIR in an area such as a community planning area would relieve the responsibility for each development that comes forward to create an EIR. That's a substantial consultant cost savings and time savings. If a master EIR could be adopted, say, when the community plan is updated. Support CEQA reform. That is something at the state level. There is a local component where we could further streamline it here locally in the entitlement process, but most of that would occur at the state level, and all parties are looking at that and supporting a deep dive look at that at the state level. Aligning state oversight, that basically means we have a lot of affordable housing programs with a lot of different regulations. The area median income requirements are different. The monitoring requirements are different. The construction standards are different. If we could get our state, various state layers, to look at these programs and overlap them and at least get some of the things consistent among programs, that would also save time and money. And then last, increasing financing. We have a list of legislative and advocacy activities that we've been participating up to this point in time and are following now, and there's a lot more to do. But it falls in these major areas that we're following very closely. Advocate for a fair share of homeless funds. That's a big priority for us here locally, and we're very involved and very vested in that. Expanding the low-income housing tax credit. There's legislation moving forward right now that would increase the tax credit program by $300 million annually, which would make available more tax credit funds for affordable housing development. Increase federal rental assistance. That's our housing choice voucher. That also falls into the home program, which is being severely cut back. So there are advocacy efforts to increase those federal sources. And also expanding the Move to Work Authority, extending that program with the federal government. That is, again, at the federal level. That's basically a summary of the action plan. We're presenting a preview here, and the report, the final report, will actually give a deep dive on each one of these, meaning steps to implement and who is responsible. That's what, you know, whose jurisdiction does it fall into? Is it something we can do locally? Do we need to work with the state? Do we need to work with the federal government? Another added dimension that we asked Kaiser Marston to do for us is to give us an idea of the cost savings. We know that some of these action steps will result in real money to the developers of housing, whether it's market rate or affordable. So Kaiser Marston looked at some of the priority actions, the ones that had actual dollar cost benefits, and gave us a range of the actual cost savings. And their methodology and how they arrived at these numbers will be broken down in the report. But we just wanted to give you a sort of an idea of the cost savings that could occur if these items were implemented. And this slide shows you for affordable housing the action steps, and we just reviewed those. And this is a savings per unit in any individual development. For instance, shorten the entitlement process. That could, because of consultant time, holding costs, you know, time is money, shortening the entitlement process can per unit save $5,000 to $9,000 per unit in an affordable project. To quantify that a little bit further, about annual savings per year. The additional column is potential applicability. So not all of these action items apply to every project that comes forward. The entitlement process, yes, every affordable or market rate project that moves forward goes through the entitlement process. So that's 100% applicability. Kaiser Marston took an estimated 650 units per year of affordable housing production and then assigned that cost savings number to 100% applicability, and the savings range now from $3.2 million to almost $6 million per year. And again, you can see the rest of the column. The total savings per year, almost $13 million to almost $24 million. So the feel that we're getting from this is the cost savings are significant.
I do want to acknowledge the heavy lifting and expertise of Lassar Development Consultants. Jennifer Lassar is here. Her team has been working tirelessly on this report, and Kaiser Marston Associates as well. Paul Mara is also here. This team has done something that has never been done before. We've seen reports why affordable housing is expensive. This one says, whose responsibility is it? If you change it, what can you save or what can you create, and what are you going to do about it? The also the Coalition for Housing and Jobs that Mr. Gentry formed has been extremely beneficial to this process. We now sit down regularly with representatives from the Taxpayers Association, the Building Industry Association, the Apartment Association, BioCom, NAOP, I'm missing a couple, but folks that recognize housing affordability is critical in our city, and it impacts both low-income as well as market-rate families because of the high costs of housing and our limited supply of land. The report is heavy into metrics, and I'm just going to flip through some of these charts. And it's 70% of San Diegans can't afford a home here. We have an affordability gap. You can see the home prices continue to go up again, and wages are not. This one on the right, the green and blue dots, is very interesting because what it says is this is the permits per year per 1,000 new residents that are issued over the affordability. San Diego is at the top in one of the little green buttons. And we want to just tell you that the next steps for us are to finalize the report, which should be done by, we hope, the end of this month, early next month. We make another presentation before Smart Growth and Land Use on December 9th. And Mr. Gentry and I and Ms. Lassar and I have been making the rounds to review this with all of the council members and city offices. And we have also taken this report and had it peer reviewed. So there are some key people in the industry who have reviewed this and given us their comments. So this is not something that's going to be rolled out in a vacuum. It's something that everybody has seen and knows is coming, because a challenge will be, we're saying we need to change something in our own shops. Are we willing to do that because we're putting it into writing? So it's very exciting, and I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Gentry to have final words. And as again, Jennifer and Paul are both here to address any other questions.
I'll point out that the final report, when it comes out, is going to be listing a number of different specific areas, one with the Housing Commission, several with the city, the state, the federal level, where the cost issue itself can be dealt with, or at least identified and focused on as well. And this will be the first report I'm aware of in this city where the end result wasn't, isn't this awful? Somebody should do something about this. These are going to be some specific recommendations that, particularly in the Lassar report, will have drill downs on each item showing to-dos. Now, I'll point out that the Housing Commission, in a lot of respect, is whatever metaphor you want to use, we're above our pay grade, we're punching above our weight, whatever it is. Most of this stuff is beyond our capacity to control or change. But what we can do is point out and then to influence. And so this, when this comes out, I suspect that we'll have another opportunity to sit down with this body to go over the particulars, but I think it's a reflection of what this board charged me with a year ago in terms of trying to get the situation on the ground here changed.
Commissioner Tessin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I want to applaud staff for continuing to keep this on the forefront, and I appreciate the work that's gone into analyzing what we found before. I think it was before we had said something about 40% or something of the costs were attributable to government requirements, if I remember correctly. And I appreciate you guys keeping this on the forefront and analyzing and digging down further into where the problem is. What I'd like to see is I'd like us to focus in on the likelihood of making changes and prioritize those actions, number one. In other words, we may have a greater chance of making some changes at the local level versus at the state level or the federal level. Certainly, we want to point those out, but I'd like for us to focus on and prioritize our efforts on the greatest chances of us making some impact, at least starting there, number one. Number two is I've told Mr. Gentry before that this agency gets a lot of criticism because of what we're paying for public housing, okay? And we need to be talking more about this publicly, whether it's from the initial study that was done by Point Loma Nazarene University, or these studies that are being done by Kaiser and Lazar. We need to be pushing this messaging out more and more so that the public knows and the public officials know that this agency is trying to address this issue, that we're not sitting back and simply accepting the status quo, that we recognize the problem and we're trying to do something about it. Only that way are we going to get some assistance from local, state, and federal elected officials to help us address this problem. This is a big rock to move. And if I remember correctly, I think that this agency was the only one in the state that was even addressing this issue, if not nationally. And I think we ought to be proud of that. But we ought to push this out publicly, and every time that we find where the problem is, what we're trying to do about it, we ought to be talking about it more and more, so that it doesn't look to the public like we're just accepting the status quo and not trying to do anything about it.
Thank you.
Now, interestingly enough, on the idea of increasing the local entitlement process and reducing the time to do that, we were given a tremendous boost this last week when the governor vetoed a bill from a local legislator that would have eliminated that ability to do so. So kudos to the governor. And I look at the idea that maybe we ought to push with Civic San Diego and see if maybe somehow we can team up to try to make that shortened entitlement process a reality, not just for downtown, but for affordable projects. Mr. Gentry?
As Mr. Tassin put it so well, we are the only local housing agency in the state pushing on the cost issue. And you all charged me a year ago with changing state law. You remember that. And you know what? It's going to happen. Sometime the next, Debbie, was 6 to 12 months. Luckily, the state got a new state treasurer this past January, Mr. Chung, who has adopted affordable housing reform as one of his two major areas as well. We have had a huge influence in that arena in Sacramento. Both Debbie and I, and Debbie spent a lot of time with Mr. Chung's key people. They are floating ideas right now, which, as you might imagine, every time you change something, somebody's ox gets gored. So we're going through that painful process now statewide. Parenthetically, that's why tax reform hasn't happened in a long time either. But this kind of reform, you think some things are commonsensical, They're not always, when you get down into the details. So there are going to be some changes on the state level the next year that we can take, I think, some particular pride in helping to achieve. And in terms of the local level, there are a lot of changes going on now in City Hall, particularly in the development services arena, where we can't say we caused that to happen, but we've had a lot of influence, a lot of conversations with the new people been on and over there about a year and a half or so ago. So there are some improvements coming. I'll also point out that I've asked Debbie and her staff that as a part or as an adjunct to this report, to have a listing of all the properties that we've either acquired, developed, or assisted others to develop, either by issuing bonds or bonds and gap financing, over the last 7 years, since those are what I'm responsible for, and to show the wide range in cost of those properties. Not everything has been $400K a door. Some of it has been. Primarily the low-income housing, the 9% tax credit program that we've talked about, the structural issues there that Treasurer Chang is dealing with on the state level. But we produced stuff when we did the public housing repurposing, repositioning, as y'all who were around then remember, down to $200K a door, less. So we're going to be able to show that not everything we do is terribly expensive, that we've shown a good return for the taxpayers' money, and we'll be able to show why anomalies are the way they are. Thank you, sir.
Any other comments? Thank you very much to you and your staff, and keep up the good work. And Jennifer and the gentleman from Kaiser, Paul, please keep working with us and helping us make this thing become a reality.
Mr. Chairman, just before we leave that, maybe what I'd like to ask staff, if you would please, is that they come back with a strategy for how we push out these findings that we found, and that we prioritize the ones that we have the greatest likelihood of impact in on a short term, medium term, and long term.
I would be more than happy to do that. The list that we shared with you of 10 actionable is narrowed down from 60. So these are ones we feel that we can actually see some movement on. But I did hear you say that you'd like to see some more local initiatives on there, so we'll review it again and make sure that we are doing as much as we can here within our city. And that is true. However, we've been using the phrase the stars are in alignment because of what's been happening in Sacramento. And another aspect of this report is that it can be delivered to the city of Napa or Bakersfield or San Francisco, and they can pull out the San Diego specifics and put in their specifics. But the state issues are the states. The federals are the federals. And we think that with the right communication strategy on this, this is absolutely something that we could have an impact on the state level at.
Mr. Gentry?
Also, just in terms of process, we didn't wait till we had a fully cooked report to bring to you one fell swoop. We've tried to do this in a series of stages. So this is where we are now. We'll have the full report out, as Debbie said, hopefully at the end of this month. And we are going to be doing a presentation on that to the city's Smart Growth Committee on December the 9th. So at either, depending, we can do a follow-up report back to this board on either our November the 20th board meeting or more likely in January at the next board meeting thereafter since we're dark in December. But we will keep you up to speed on this as it goes and would be willing or would welcome any input that you might give to us.
Commissioner Cerny?
I'd just like to add my appreciation and thank you for the excellent work that you're doing. And I really hope that we can get recognition as being the leaders of this change and that it will have a rippling effect throughout the economy, San Diego County, state of California, whatever. But I really think that you deserve public recognition for being the leadership in this regard. And thank you so much for your efforts.
by chance, have you coordinated with the city auditor?
Let me address that one. Two of the city council members most graciously targeted Mr. Luna and his staff to come down and help us in this arena. And several staff, including Ms. Ruane, and I sat down with Ed and his folks last week. And as I told the city auditor, truthfully, we're transparent. Everything's open. They can look at anything they want to see. We're going to treat it as a learning exercise and hopefully learn something in the process. And hopefully the learning will go two ways. And in that regard, Ms. Spoon, maybe that will help us provide additional information down the street on what some of our structural issues are here.
Thank you again. And that concludes the public agenda for today's meeting. We will take a couple of moments and then reorganize for the closed executive session. Thank you all.